Religion on the Line. 2 hours of exploration into the world of spirituality, faith, hope, love, or the hot buttons of today. Talk about it now. 576-7710. And now, Religion on the Line.
Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line. Here we are in the heart of the country, and hope that we can make our way into your heart, and you are certainly making your way into ours here on Religion on the Line, a program that allows for, encourages, supports, buttresses, and affirms, what shall we say, vigorous discussion, heartwarming exchanges, conversation about matters of spirituality, religion, ethics, belief, superstition even from time to time, and so much more. Give us a call at 576-7710, 576-7710. You can put an 816 or a 913 in front of that so that we can get you from long distance and receive your call. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill. Hello. Hello. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with...
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes. Your name again or introduce yourself again, Bill.
This is Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City and Kansas, coming to you from the Convocation in Florida, along with...
Michael Zedek? Let's see here. All righty. Michael will be on in just a minute. We somehow had a little technical difficulty.
Oh, boy.
We'll be on in just a bit. So, Bill, you're down there for what? What's going on in Florida?
I am part of a delegation from the Archdiocese for the Convocation of Catholic Leaders, spreading the joy of the gospel in America. And it's a rather unprecedented conference. Nothing like this really has happened in recent years, in my lifetime, where the U.S. bishops have gathered together and brought leadership from all over the country to dialogue about how we can enact Pope Francis's instructions to create a culture of missionary disciples and reinvigorate evangelization here in the United States. So it's the last time the church did something like this was about 100 years ago. So this is really kind of an exciting time. We have over 3,000 delegates from all across the United States. So it's very exciting to be part of this convocation. It just started yesterday with a mass presided by Cardinal Dolan. What an amazing preacher that man is. Just incredible. He shared a story about Mother Teresa when Malcolm Muggeridge asked her, how do you have such joy when you're dealing with so much hardship? And she said, joy. First comes Jesus. That's the J.
Mm-hmm.
Second comes others. That's the O. And then finally comes yourself. And if you have those priorities, you'll have joy. And so just a great kind of set the keynote for the entire conference of how are we going to equip Catholics to go out and evangelize and encourage and share people to have a personal encounter with Christ. So kind of exciting, really. I'm sure for many of our listeners, they'll say, is this a Protestant conference? What's going on here? Yeah, really exciting.
All right.
I'm back.
You're back. Okay, would you introduce yourself, Michael?
Yeah, Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda. And I take it that there's two of us not in the studio, and you're all by yourself, John? Bob?
Yes, c'est moi. We're going to have Bill for about 30 minutes. We had another caller that we hope will call back in about 30 minutes or whatever. All right.
That was I?
That was you. Never mind. So, well, we're glad that you did call back.
Michael?
What, Bill?
Michael, do you want to ask yourself a question? Was that why you were calling?
So, forgive me, because I was off the air. Somehow when we switched over, I lost the connection. Where is the conference, Bill?
It is in Orlando, Florida. Very, very beautiful.
Oh, perfect time of year to be in Orlando, Florida.
My goodness, is it hot or what?
It's kind of muggy, but it's really nice. I managed to make it to Orlando without any of my kids finding that's the place where Disney World is. So,
again, forgive me if this is repetition. But how long is the conference going?
It's from now to July 4th. You can tell that this was a conference planned by celibates because they did it over a holiday weekend. So it's rough to be apart from the family, but really great to be a part of this exciting time.
Well, that's wonderful. And is this the first effort at this particular focus that you're aware of for the Catholic Church of America?
Last night they said, you know, the last time the Church of the United States did something like this was about 100 years ago, 1917. And really, that was a response to the crisis of World War I. This is the last time that led to the creation of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. So, this is not something that bishops do very. I mean, that they get together as bishops very often, at least twice a year, but actually pulling together delegations of leadership. And what's really exciting about this conference is it's not just about us receiving, but rather giving back and they intend this to be a real dialogue of us looking at the state of the church, seeing where it's at, and then trying to come up with under the guidance of the Holy Spirit, with strategies and real best practices for how can we reach out, particularly to the peripheries. I mean, that was a big challenge in the apostolic exhortation that Pope Francis released a few years back of really challenging us as church to look for people on the peripheries, look for people in the margins and reach out. So the Church of the United States is asking herself, how can we do that? And particularly, how can we empower Catholics to search for a personal encounter with Christ and then share that joy that comes from knowing Jesus? We did some studies and we asked Catholics, have you ever had a personal encounter with Christ? Do you feel like you have a personal relationship? And a surprising number said, didn't know what we were talking about. What are you talking about? That sounds Protestant. So for Catholics, that's a problem. Being Catholic is all about being in relationship with Jesus Christ and having that encounter. And how do we equip Catholics to share their joy, not put their light under a bushel, but rather go out and encounter? So the idea really is it's a lot of responsibility. It's humbling. It's very humbling, but we're supposed to come back equipped with information and ideas and bring it back to the archdiocese and really reach out to Catholics and start evangelizing or do a better job. I mean, we've always evangelized, but to even do a better job. We'll be having a convocation in the archdiocese for our leaders Friday, October 13th, and taking some of what we're learning now back to our community.
You say,
but
Bill,
specifically, it's learning that's going to come out of this, as opposed to or is there on the agenda a specific initiative that not unlike the conference of bishops that came out of the 100 years ago, which I assume you didn't attend that conference.
It's very well organized. They've done an amazing job pulling this conference together. But the three modes are see, judge, and act. And so we are going to spend today, as I understand it, really sort of looking at the landscape. Particularly analyzing where are we at this current state of culture in the world. Looking, one of the issues we're going to look at is what's called the nuns. And we're not talking about religious sisters. We're talking about people in the United States who identify themselves. When you ask them, what's your religious affiliation? Mm-hmm. They say none. And for the church in America, it's rather startling. The number, you know, the number of Catholics has grown significantly since, like, so I think, like, in, you know, in the United States in the 1970s, there were like 50 million Catholics who self-identified as Catholics. Now that number's up to like 75 million. But what's disturbing is there's 30 million people now who are nuns, who used to be Catholics. So they've been baptized, they've probably been confirmed, but once they moved into adulthood, for whatever reason, they broke with their affiliation, and they identify themselves as nun, even though they were brought up Catholic and raised in the faith. So,
Bill, we're going to attend to the nuns and everybody else.
Yeah.
We're a full opportunity station, and so we're going to send out some commercials here to everybody, just like this broadcast goes to everybody. But we do need to take a break. We're going to be right back here in just a moment here at Religion on the Line at 576-7710. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO. 710 AM, 103.7 FM, and also KMAJ 1440 AM over in Topeka. We are here, and we welcome you, and we are glad that you have allowed us to be part of your Sunday morning. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kingston, Kansas, coming to you from the Convocation of Catholic Leaders in Florida, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda. Didn't know we were going to be just the two of us later with the callers. Boy, I might have slept in.
No. On a holiday weekend, here we are, you know, plugging away. We're delighted that, Bill, you could call in. And so, Bill, is there, let's just be honest here. Sometimes when you do something that's new, the people that resist it are not the people in the pews in a congregational setting. Sometimes they're the people behind the bima or the ambo or the pulpit.
Yeah.
They are the leaders themselves. Is there some skepticism at the conference about what is being proposed?
You know, I think everybody here, since they were handpicked by their bishops, I think there's the spirit here is there's a lot of optimism. My own personal opinion, talking to diocesan leaders, lay Catholics, there is some trepidation, not so much about what's trying to be accomplished, but how are we going to bring this back? Because certainly, you know, what the bishops are proposing in response to what the Pope really has asked for is somewhat of a sea change. So I think everybody here is totally on board and excited and enthused. But there's also a keen awareness that, we're going to come back and we're going to move the cheese. I'm referring to that book, you know, Who Moved My Cheese, mm-hmm. about dealing with change. We're going to be pushing a change. But one of the beautiful things about the Catholic Church with regard to its hierarchy, when they're all on board, and working together, when the bishops are all on board, in which they are at the convocation, things happen. And so, if the archbishop wants something to happen, it's people are going to work to make that happen. So I tell people sometimes, because they get frustrated that the church doesn't adapt or change quickly enough for them, and I always remind Catholics, hey, we're more of a battleship than we are a Swiss boat, you know, but we it takes us a while to adjust our course, but once we get on course, we're firm and steady. So I think this convocation is a great moment in the life of the church here in the United States. And I just would ask all our listeners, if you could be praying for us, if you're Christian, please pray that the Holy Spirit really empowers us, and that we can bring back a message of hope. And we can be fully equipped to share the joy that we have found in Jesus Christ with others.
All righty. Well, this is a time for conventions and convocations and conferences like you're attending all across. the country these things take place. And we might want to ask our listeners a little bit if they have found value in those kind of things. Our General Assembly of the Christian Church Disciples of Christ is coming up fairly soon in Indianapolis. And it's a biannual thing every couple of years. Michael, there's a conference of rabbis or of congregations every year in your tradition?
The North American Conference of Congregations is a biannual, you know, biennial, or whatever the correct way of pronouncing that word is, every other year. And there's the North American Rabbis Conference is every year, even as there are regional conferences every year as well, which in order for there to be both fraternization of colleagues, as you well know, Bob, it's a lonely business. Mm-hmm. As well, if someone can't afford to go to the national gathering, the local is always less dear in terms of the cost to get there. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily the time, but the cost. That's our methodology for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. And many of these conferences are a chance to have a reunion with dear colleagues over the years, mm-hmm. that stimulate and always challenge, not always, but frequently, and also give great encouragement just in seeing folks. And also seeing the larger imprint of your efforts, I guess, to see the collective impact that one can have as part of a larger mm-hmm. group. So
I agreed, wholeheartedly agreed. Although I admit in later years, boy, is that an ugly phrase. I would rarely go for more than a day, perhaps, to the congregational gathering, because it truly was organized for the focus and enrichment of lay leadership. Rabbis went often, but it was really more reunion,
and I guess you were heading off for coffee.
The cost to the congregation.
Yeah.
In general, that's where the money comes from to attend those events on the part of the clergy.
Yeah. The usefulness of large conglomerate meeting gatherings for denominations waxes and wanes. Sometimes they're very, very galvanizing, particularly I can remember, and this is kind of before I ever attended one, but in the history of our denomination, one of the big gatherings that we had was in Dallas in, I believe, 1965. And none other than Martin Luther King was one of the featured speakers.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And that was pretty, you know, Texas is not known as an extraordinarily progressive state at that time. Our denomination probably was like the rest of America, split maybe into several factions over the whole issue of civil rights. We're a predominantly Anglo expression of Protestantism on the American scene. And we were being challenged mightily, but our leaders saw fit to have Dr. King come and speak. So they can be innocuous. They can be very expensive, as Michael's alluding to, but they can also be very useful. We pray, Bill, that it will be very useful for you.
Yeah, thank you. I am so grateful, and I'm very humbled to be a part of it. It's very exciting, and it's great, too, to meet so many Catholics from across the country, part of different charisms and movements. And oftentimes, as Catholics, we'll have these kinds of conventions. But this is kind of unique in as much as who's together. So the lay faithful leaders, along with their bishops, along with religious and priests and deacons, it's really a remarkable coming together. So I'm grateful for your prayers and all the prayers of our listeners. And I think it's going to be exciting when we come back.
Bill,
God does with this.
The music is playing, and we've got to go.
I got to go.
All right. Well, blessings, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye, Bill.
All right. And we'll be back after these messages here at Religion on the Line. Good morning. You've Got Religion on the Line here at KCMO, 710 AM, 103.7 FM, 1440 AM as well in Topeka, Kansas. We are here in the heart of the heart of the country, Greater Kansas City, but also reaching across the land and sometimes even around the world to engage a conversation about religion, faith, spirituality, belief, and all the rest. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
And Bill Scholl will be back with us next week after his first segment with us. He had to go at a conference in Orlando, Florida. You know, the rates are cheap enough to get everybody to go down there. We were down there one time, but my goodness, it is really boiling hot usually. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you're lucky, you get the 4 o'clock shower, which makes no difference.
Yeah, just makes things more humid, makes you sweat even more. My goodness, Michael, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, first foremost, it's good to be back.
Yeah, you've been away a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Second, I am curious if there were any particular themes, conversations, discussions that seemed uniquely provocative or memorable while I was gone that we might continue to reflect on, if that is of the moment. Third, I've got a few items, so should I go to the few items?
You know, let me just catch you up just a little bit, and I'm going to kind of put a log I put on the fire last week, or an ice cube I put in the glass last week, whatever metaphor we want to use. I want to put it in again. We did have some conversation about many number of things, but we never got to talk about the religious aspects of Wonder Woman. And there are some, and because it is about...
I take it you've seen it.
Yeah,
I have not.
Yeah. It is a pretty good piece of cinematic wonder done by the Marvel Comics people, the people that adapt those comics. And it's very interesting backstory and wonderful kind of treatment of how the gods, in terms of mythology of Greek and Roman sorts, interact with human beings. So there's that. The other thing was, I want to ask a question again. Where do you get your forgiveness? Or where do you go for forgiveness? Now, one might say divinity always, but how does it work out? You know, there is in Catholic liturgy and most Protestant expressions of Christianity a moment that is liturgically codified where there is an expression or confession of sin and then an expression of absolution or of forgiveness every Sunday. I mean, it's written in the prayer books for the Methodists, the Presbyterians, Lutherans, and all the rest. If you're a free church tradition, that is not so formalized in terms of words, but sometimes we have that also in our various expressions, for example, among disciples. I'm just curious about that. I want to put that on the fire. So go with your topics.
Okay. But wait, aside, you may remember Rabbi Herman Shulman, who passed away at 100 in January, and I have been ever so often continuing the class that he taught for 50-plus years every Saturday morning, and I was there yesterday to work with the class. And one of the topics that came up was the issue of forgiveness and the challenge of when I forgive another for some offense against me. Forget about the challenge vis-a-vis deity. What if that person has never asked for forgiveness? What's involved, what's not involved? Is there a dynamic there that is different than when someone implores reconciliation because of some offense they've done to you?
Yeah.
And we talked at some length about, sure, there's a difference, but the challenge isn't in the other. The challenge is, what does holding the grudge do to you?
Yeah, I'm remembering two or three quotes. One, whose origin I can't remember, but I used to say it again and again and again. There's always more mercy and forgiveness in God than there are mistakes and sin in us.
I like it.
And I truly believe that. But the other one was Annie Lamott's, to go to your point, Michael, about not forgiving another. Not forgiving somebody else is like drinking rat poison and waiting for the rat to die.
Right.
And
right.
So, yeah.
Well, as long as you brought up Annie Lamott, one of the things I wanted to do is, Bob, as you may recall, when my mom was reaching the end of her journey, we did bring in Evergreen Hospice Care, which is a group that I had never heard of. I think it's a newer hospice program based in Olathe, and recently received a letter follow-up from their director of spiritual and emotional support. And lo and behold, I wanted to share the Annie Lamott quote. You ready?
Yeah.
You will lose someone you can't live without, and your heart will be badly broken. And the bad news is that you never completely get over the loss of your beloved. But this is also the good news. They live forever in your broken heart that doesn't seal back up. Mm-hmm. And you come through. It's like having a broken leg that never heals perfectly, that still hurts when the weather gets cold. But you can learn to dance with the limp.
Yeah. Nice.
I hate her.
Now, Rabbi Shulman, by the way... we have not talked about the memorialization of his extraordinary legacy there. Has there a book of a compendium of his statements or writings or sermons or anything like that?
He never wrote a sermon. So he was forced by a congregant friend to do what we'll call an autobiography, called Here I Am, and he was interviewed, and the person wrote that
transcript,
and it sort of set in the context of personal journey, impact in terms of his religious imagination. That was a few years ago, and more recently, a member of the congregation wrote a very lengthy biography called A Brand from the Fire.
If you give me an address,
he was a refugee from the Nazis, plucked from the fire, and even more recently, a congregant, a book called The Gang of Five. It's a small little book, and it's about the five German rabbinical students who were rescued from the, you should forgive the expression, the Hochschule des Wissenschaft des Judentums in Berlin. Before the door closed for Jews getting out of Germany by the Hebrew Union College. And those five individuals had an extraordinary impact on non-Orthodox Judaism in North America. And it's absolutely stunning that those five, no less, one could argue, I suppose, that they would simply be, it was the right time, but they brought their convictions in a new way, and in a way that could be heard, that absolutely altered the course of non-Orthodox Judaism.
Wow, and he was one of those five. Yeah,
those five. Yeah.
Wow. Michael, if you give me the address offline and another plot, I'd love to write to whoever I need to write to request copies
I'll send you a copy.
Beautiful. I'd like to have copies of everything.
You just sent me a copy of a wonderful sermon, and even more importantly, the program for the induction ceremonies.
The induction into the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum's Hall of Game. Did you enjoy that or what?
Oh.
Awesome. All right.
I read the sermon, and it was very good, of course. That doesn't surprise me.
All right.
But, the program is by my bed.
Oh. The sermon went into the recycling bin, but you got to preserve the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum program. Absolutely. Hey, we need
to. Well, if you must know, yes.
Yeah, we're gonna take a break. We'll be right back, Michael. We'll get to those topics of yours, and also of our other folks. We've got to call in. We're gonna be right back after these messages. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line on KCMO 710 AM 103.7 FM and here in the heart of the country, but also reaching out over to Topeka 1440 KMAJ. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek. Rabbi Emeritus Temple B'nai Yehuda. And when we started this show, neither of us had that title.
No, but also, boy, we want that little intro music, Rick, again and again, man. That wakes you up. And we are glad. Michael, before we go to your topics, shall we go to a couple of callers?
Absolutely.
Let's do that. Let's go to Madeline. Madeline, you've got religion on the line.
Good morning, boys. I am so happy to be able to speak to you today. I want you to know that I am home. I've been in the home, and today, or when they came to me in the hospital and said, today's the day for you to go, all I could think of was, and I think it's Matthew, but I'm not sure, rise, pick up your stretcher, and go home. And I was so blessed, and I am blessed. And I want you to know I'm very grateful to Religion on the Line and having you all of you are part of it, no matter who's on or who's the guest, to be a part of my life these past 16, 17 years. It's great. It's great. But most of all, I was sorry I didn't get to talk to you on Father's Day. I wanted to say I consider you and all the people associated with you, our priests, the rabbis, everybody, you are fathers. You're fathers to us. You are our shepherds. And it's very important to please to me and the people that you serve. And those women behind you, your family that make sacrifices for you to do the things you do. I can't imagine that. So know that you are appreciated, and you are our shepherds, and we need you so badly. Mm. So you have a blessed day, and know that I am, if you said, Madeline, how are you today? I am going to say very blessed and grateful, and God bless you all for me.
Madeline, before you go, allow us both to say we're glad that you're out of the hospital. And at home, and we pray healing mercies for you in whatever your situation, and that had we known, we would have probably given you a shout-out or more prior.
And Bob would have given you a certificate for a fish fry.
Well, you know, Rick, I called in last week because I couldn't get my radio, nothing would work, and he gave me Rabbi's line, so I could listen.
And wasn't that lovely?
Rick, that above and beyond the call, bravo!
I know, Rick. One day when I can a little strong and I can write, he will know. But I am okay. I am okay. There's something we can do, and so many people that aren't. Thank you, please. I feel those prayers, and just have a wonderful day and. Give those ladies you live with a hug for me, please.
And a happy and blessed 4th of July celebration for you forthcoming, okay?
You have a great day. God bless.
Okay, all right,
you
Madeline.
Too, dear.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we just wrap up the show now?
We're done. We're absolutely done. Now, actually, we have another caller. Mike, you've got religion on the line as well.
Good morning, Reverend Dr. Rabbi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Reverend, you nailed one of my theological questions, and I've had recent personal experience with feeling forgiven, and really, I mean, deeply psychologically absolved of things that I've had, you know, for a long time in life. And you, when you asked the question, posed the question, where does forgiveness come from? I listened to a lot of things and realized evangelical theology and stuff, and I'm sometimes, I wouldn't say troubled, but I question some of the thrust of the theory of not the theory, but the doctrine of atonement as being such a necessary part of the forgiveness process. Now, you can't look back on history and judge earlier people by current standards. What is that? The word atavism or whatever it is, when
anachronistic
Now, when I think, like, this is going way back, and Rabbi will know about this, but how would it absolve me if I did some crime against somebody or some shortcoming or failing? How would killing an animal, a helpless lamb or something, like that seems like a view of God that is so ancient, like a Middle Eastern way of looking at things. Like, is atonement still considered the necessary element of forgiveness, or is it evolved into something?
Well, Mike, what's awkward in your construction is that may be built in the assumption that you got to do that ritual in order to get what you're after. And the ritual is symbolic. If the ritual itself is required, you've just made a transition not from the world of religion into the world of manipulation and magic. In fact, we had, ironically, this particular week's Torah portion in that Torah class I referred to earlier has the quintessential problematic around this. Namely, are you familiar with the phrase, the red heifer?
Yes.
So a person who had ritual impurity because of contact with a corpse, quote-unquote, whatever the heck all that means is a whole other matter, could be restored, quote-unquote, by the ash with water mixture of the so-called red heifer. By the way, great little book, not little, The Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon. It's a marvelous read based on this biblical referral about the red heifer. But the challenge and the irony and the irrationality here is that those who prepare the ashes of the red heifer are made impure. So the sages ask regularly, how is it possible that that which makes the impure pure makes the pure impure? Follow so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. And the answer is, it's to point out to you that this is ritual, not magic. You know, poof, you're pure, because I just threw over the stuff. In short, for Jewish tradition's understanding of what we'll call the sacrificial cult, it was a way of saying, this is how I reconcile. Not that in itself it could reconcile. The person had to be present. And I don't mean present as there. I mean that this was an action of intent, not an action that, whatever the intent, worked.
Right. Now, I think that's where the Christian notion of belief being so key regarding Jesus, I think that is part of the evolution of that. You know, belief being so key over, you know, faith over works kind of thing like that.
Can you hold on through the break?
Yeah.
We'll continue this conversation. We need to take a break, pay some bills, and then also listen to a little bit of news. And we're going to be right back after this little portion for the second half of our show and our time together here at Religion on the Line. Do give us a call, 576-7710, 576-7710.